Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Justin Rowan from The Chase Down joins us to talk about his Donovan Mitchell take and stuff that actually matters going on with the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving. He's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Justin, what's up, buddy? How are you doing post-draft? Lottery, I should say.
Yeah. Well, I guess we learned that the draft lottery or the NBA draft might actually get pushed back even further, which I'm less than thrilled about. But I'm doing well, man. I'm excited. I think fifth pick is a good outcome. I listened to your guys' lottery podcast, and I agreed with a lot of the thoughts there where you hear – even from national guys, that what they're hearing from NBA teams is that the top three in this draft, even though they do kind of have a perceived higher upside, there's a lot of question marks and a lot of risk there. And when you consider that most of these players wouldn't go top five, top six in any other draft, I kind of like the fact that the Cavs are in a position where they're going to be drafting somebody that maybe has a little bit of a higher floor and a higher likelihood of them being able to develop them into a player that reaches their potential.
Yeah. I'll say this. I like to hear what both of you at this. You and Evan, hello. How are you?
I'm thanks for, you know, yeah. I guess this is Locked On Cavs with Justin Rowan and Chris Manning, and I'm just the odd one out at this point, but I'm great, thanks.
I just want to say, I think I understand, like, reading the financial reasons why teams would sort of want, the Warriors as being kind of, like, the obvious example of what, and the Cavs actually, too, considering, like, if Drummond opts in, and, like, they're not going to have a ton of, they're like, if the luxury tax just specifically, like, they would have some things to kind of consider there, but from a product perspective, it sucks, but, like, I get it financially. So I guess I just want to see how it ultimately plays out if they do ultimately move the draft back.
Yeah, no. Kidding. I mean, if they do have the option to continue voluntary workouts, you would want the draft to be as soon as possible because then at least there is more opportunity for whoever they pick to develop some chemistry there and work with the guys. Even if it isn't a full structured practice, you want to develop chemistry because a lot of what we're going to have next season, at least with the Cavs messaging, is fairly open competition. Like, a lot of these guys are going to be competing with one another. They're all going to get burned, but you want those guys to develop chemistry and kind of start to figure out what works now.
No, for sure. And I think it would be beneficial, at least especially for in the Cavs situation, where you get a young guy on your roster and signed and committed to the foreseeable future, because you need to figure out what direction this team is heading in still, because Chris and I have gone on this a lot, back and forth on this a lot, Justin, and I don't know how you feel, but, like, the Cavs just kind of feel like they're hitting a crossroads where they want to be a playoff team, but at the same time, they have all these young pieces where they could bottom out and just completely rebuild and just embrace the whole movement, but that doesn't seem financially viable for Dan Gilbert, and Mr. Gilbert at this point, and I don't know, how do you feel about the direction of this team? Like, that's just, like, it's such a broad question, but you're more positive than I am at this point about the situation, so maybe I just need to hear a refreshing take on your part.
Yeah, so here's where I stand on this. I do think that their goal next year should be to make the playoffs. I think that that's what they should try for. They should try to win every single game. I do not think that this roster can, well, I shouldn't say can, because you never know how players are going to develop. Look, two years ago in the playoffs, Pascal Siakam was a non-factor as the Cavs swept the Raptors, and now he's a top 15 player. So I'll never write anything off, but I think at this point, especially with the new lottery odds, your goal should be at this point, when you have enough guys that you've drafted and that you feel pretty decent about, you should be trying to develop those guys. You should start to be developing winning habits. And I think that's what JB was doing towards the end of last season, once he took over, was guys were, the three guards there were kind of promised, it seemed like, about 26 minutes a game. But if you weren't doing the right things, if you weren't attempting to do the right things, not necessarily playing winning basketball, but trying to play winning basketball, you weren't going to close the game. It didn't matter if you were Kevin Love, Andre Drummond, Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Kevin Porter Jr. All of them got benched at certain points. And I think they're finally going to have enough guards and wings to kind of start to create that kind of accountability. And there's maybe one, maybe three or four kind of high level, maybe cornerstone guys in this upcoming draft. And the type of bottoming out that would be required to get maybe a 30% chance, I don't think that's worthwhile. I think you have to focus on trying to maximize your guys, develop winning habits. And if you're developing those guys, maybe they're going to be a tool to trade up in the draft if you only end up with like the sixth pick or something like that. Maybe you explore other options. But I think with this current lottery setup, attempting to win games and developing good habits and accountability has to be the priority.
Here's what I'll say. I understand, like, you should obviously try to win games. You should try to be competitive. I think the lottery odds thing is going to be an ongoing kind of discussion. And, you know, I think there is some... The Cavs have been the worst team in the league over the last 2 years, and they're picking fifth. Like, that is... It is a lottery, like, lucky, but that's, like, sort of suboptimal if you're them, even if you don't, like, love the guys, like, in this particular draft. Last year, obviously, you would love to get number one and just get Zion, or even number two and get Ja. I think that...
Right. Sorry to cut you off, but one thing I just want to point out, even though they were their worst team over the last 2 years, they didn't have the worst record either year. They didn't have the best lottery odds. So the amount of, like, working backwards it would take to get into that position, like, there's not an incentive for me.
What I'll say is I think the Cavs' most likely outcome to competent is not... like, make the playoffs this year. I don't believe that, like, the infrastructure of the roster, unless, like, a bajillion things break right, even in the East, is just, it's not there to me. Especially, let's say if they draft Isaac Okoro and he becomes your best wing defender or second best wing defender, like, from day one, like, that's just not, like, a recipe for making the playoffs, frankly. The other part, I think what you're trying to do is lay the foundation for, like, let's say you're lucky enough to get Cade Cunningham in 20. That is you're trying to lay the foundation so, like, when you get the guy who can actually make all this stuff fit together, and you've gotten Sexton develop winning habits, you get Kevin Porter Jr. to ideally take some kind of leap on both ends of the floor. And we find out more about what Darius is. We'll see if 40-year-old Dylan Windler, like, can hang in the NBA and if his hips are mobile enough to play defense. Like, there are things that we need to know. And it's about setting it up for when you're able to take that leap, because I think you need high related jettison it, because the Cavs just have, and the Cavs just historically, frankly, and until they show us they can do it, I don't believe that it's in the DNA of the franchise for them to, like, do what the Nets did with Kenny Atkinson or something. I just don't know if that's in the DNA of Dan, of what his mandates sort of are. Like, there's just a lot of uneasiness to me about, like, them saying they want to do that, because it's just never been the DNA of the team. Like, they had Kyrie and Tristan, and, like, how the...
But don't we want to change the DNA of
the
team?
I think in a non-LeBron... I think what you want...
That wasn't a firm yes, Chris. I'm just
Here's the thing. If you can get LeBron or Star or Luka or whomever, like, you take that guy and you run with it. But I think even the organizations like Dallas, in terms of Rick Carlisle, in terms of the quality of players they added, in terms of, like, you know, what David Griffin seems to be trying to develop in New Orleans, like... Not every franchise can be like the Lakers and get, like, AD and LeBron to come there and, like, fix everything. Like, the Clippers, you had to develop, like, a program and develop, like, an infrastructure to kind of make this sort of work. And, like, we can mock Heat culture and should make fun of it when it's silly, but, like, there's a reason, like, they're able to be pretty competitive. The Cavs just have not had that in the DNA of their franchise, and I think I need to see them actually develop that before I'm like, okay, like, I need to see them take a step towards something like that this year. If you want to say, like, 2021, let's pick top five again, or top eight probably, maybe get lucky, get number one, get Cade, and then, you know, take a leap forward in that sense.
I guess my question is, do you guys think the new lottery odds are shafting a team like Cleveland, where they finished 19-63 the year before and they get the fifth overall pick and they were on pace to win roughly 24 games this year? I mean, and they get the fifth pick in this year's draft. And I don't know, you could really make an argument that Cleveland maybe could be flirting with 30 wins with J.B. Bickerstaff because they mm-hmm. looked like a sharper, more competent team at that point. Like, do you think these new lottery odds are going to hinder the Cavs going forward? Or do you think, like, they have to explore? Because I see a lot of fans just getting up in arms saying, like, okay, well, the Cavs have to explore other avenues. They have to rebuild this team through free agency, or they have to find, like, diamonds in the rough prospects that were overlooked and, like, that were undrafted and everything. Like, there's so many different takes all over the spectrum, right? Look at it, I'm like, okay, it sucks they got fifth, but this is a good draft to get the fifth overall pick in. And I think the Cavs are building something towards competency with Kobe Altman being the GM of the future. Mm-hmm. You have J.B. Bickerstaff, who wants to be the coach of the future, and I hope he can stay as the coach of the future. And I think this Cavs team could have flirted with 30 wins with J.B. as the coach. I think they could win more than five more games for the remainder of the year, but who knows? But
right. They were at least a 500 team. To answer your question, I don't think the new lottery odds have done the Cavs any favor. But
no,
even though Chris made a good point, which is that you can't expect the Cavs to be the Lakers or the Clippers or any of the glamour markets, there is no reason you can't be Toronto,
yep.
Utah, Denver, Milwaukee. All of these teams have just said, okay, we're going to try to win games. We're going to try to create accountability. We're going to develop whatever pieces we have. Maybe the Cavs are going to get lucky, and let's say things really click next year, and they have seventh best lotto odds. You could still jump up. We've seen mm-hmm. under this new system, teams jump up. But the reality is, I think Chris is making the right point, but just the emphasis on creating the groundwork for a successful team. I think it starts now. I think it starts trying to build good habits because, look.
No, it's right. That's right. I'm not saying, like, you tank this year. I'm an adults in the room person. Like, let's get adults. Like, let's have competent people on the roster. I think JB, just as a coach, is, like, more likely to also get that out of this team than John Beilein ever was going to be. I think we very clearly know that now, too, and that matters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when, like, look at it, when the Cavs added Kevin Love and LeBron, they still started 20-21 because the carryover members still had a lot of bad habits. Mm-hmm. Reality is, so Love and Drummond are kind of, let's call them floor raisers to some extent, but when you're big men, you rely very heavily on your perimeter players to initiate looks for you, to run the offense. That inexperience is going to cap the Cavs to some extent, but they should be trying to make the playoffs. Like, they should be... There is no, like, quick fix. They don't have the ability to add a star veteran or whatever that's going to force them to get to the playoffs. But they should be trying to create accountability with the young players, trying to win every single game. That inexperience is going to cap whatever their record will be. But let's say mm-hmm. it does create a 30-win season for this team. You still have a decent shot to jump up in the lottery, and you probably have better players to work with. Like, you've probably developed your existing prospects to either go out and get a trade or to build around. You'll have a better idea of what you have, which I think needs to be a priority for the Cavs.
Yeah, I'm gonna wrap up this segment on this. I want you guys both to tell me just the name of the franchise you would want the Cavs to learn the most from.
Toronto.
Toronto as well.
Absolutely Toronto. I mean,
yeah.
look what they've done, both utilizing the G League to develop players, undrafted players, guys like Norman Powell, Pascal Siakam. They start two point guards that are shorter than Garland and Sexton and still are a very good defensive team. Absolutely be Toronto, because get to the middle and then make the adjustments from there. I think that's the type of model that the Cavs need to imitate.
Yeah, no, I agree with Justin in that regard. I think we both said Toronto at the same time because we weren't sure who was his answer first. But, you know, Toronto is just the golden standard where you look at the San Antonio model for the longest time, and I think Toronto gives a lot of hopes for... I mean, Toronto's not necessarily a small market on the big picture of things because Toronto is a glamour city and everything, but, like, not a lot of NBA players are willingly signing up to play in Toronto, so you have to develop internally and just slowly build a cachet of talent, and then... I mean, if, God willing, an opportunity like acquiring a Kawhi Leonard for DeMar DeRozan is available, you go for it. But no, Toronto is still a very good team, and I look at them. I mean, Kyle Lowry is out, so they're going to give Boston a little less trouble going forward in the next round of the playoffs, but I still feel them as like one of the biggest threats to Milwaukee in the playoffs, and I'd love for Cleveland to be in a position like that.
Toronto is my answer as well. I think Denver also just, and Denver and Utah both threw shutouts because of how they were able to bring guys along and throw them in and kind of make them work. But after the break here, we're going to talk about potential sort of the possibility that the Cavs could move the number 5 pick, which there's some weird reporting out there about that. But before we do that, I want to let you guys know about a new sponsor on the show. That's CBDMD. It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. And they have some great products, including CBD Freeze with Menthol. That's an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover, another option, combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds Arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. Right now, they have a great offer. If you use promo code NBA, they're giving all of our listeners a 25% off their next order. Again, that's with promo code NBA. Check out. It makes it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code NBA, for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. We'll be right back. All right. Guys, there's this report. We're not going to dissect it too much because the report itself doesn't have a lot of meat or substance to it, in my opinion, if you just kind of read it and kind of understand how something like that gets published in that sort of context. I personally don't see value in trading the number 5 pick. I wouldn't give up a lot to move up, frankly, considering this draft. I would not really want to move down unless you got someone vastly overpaying you in future picks in some capacity. I don't really see the benefit. I'm really on the train of like, take the best wing defender you can at 5 and be very happy with that. What do you guys think?
Evan, you want to go?
Yeah, sure. It's interesting because I like Isaac Okoro a lot. I understand why the Cavs view him with such high upside, especially if they can fix his shot. And it's not totally broken. It's not LaMelo Ball bad. Like, it has a solid foundation, and the Cavs can tinker with it and, you know, turn him into a solid enough to possibly good three-point shooter and just a shooter in general. Like, I think that's a good idea. Like, Devin Vassell, really like what he brings to the table just in terms of a 3-and-D prospect. I mean, he's not really going to be franchise-altering talent. I mean, he does draw comparisons to Chris Middleton, which I consider a star player before the playoffs for the Bucks, but which would be great for the Cavs to have, because I think if you could copy and paste Chris Middleton to all 29 teams other than Milwaukee, you have an improved NBA. Like, I agree, Chris. I think you should take the best prospect available, but there are trades out there that seem like a lot of fun, and like I'd dabble in those if I could really do so. And like, shout out to Bleacher Report. Like, this trade is just really stuck in my craw ever since I saw it. But if Cleveland offered 5 and Dante Exum for Kelly Oubre in the 10th pick in the draft, and you're still able to get a Devin Vassell type of player who is projected to go in the 10th spot and even lower than that. Like, shout out to Trevor Magnotti. He said like he's gonna end up with San Antonio and he's gonna be an absolute world beater. But if you're able to get that kind of trade, like, you know, no, Cleveland should go for that because Kelly Oubre fits in perfectly into their core. But I don't know. Like, we talked about it in the prior segment, how quick teams are going to be to move up in this draft just because of the uncertainties with what the salary cap's going to be at because of the pandemic, what they can and can't afford going towards for the pandemic. But it's a weird time, and if an opportunity allows it and the Cavs are able to get a young prospect or draft capital, you go for it. But at this juncture, I'd go with a young wing defender and then just move forward with what you have.
Yeah, I totally agree with Evan there. Especially with the potential Oubre trade, if that was something that was actually on the table, I'd be in for that. And that would be the type of player that I would be willing to move the pick. So, I mean, that's ideal because it's a trade down, and I think there isn't tons and tons of drop-off there. But The only other circumstance where I would really look to trade it is, let's say there is somebody like a Brandon Ingram, where the Pelicans don't want to pay him, and you can figure out a sign and trade there, or any other kind of early second contract type guy that has already kind of proven himself that would play well off of the existing pieces. Sure, you explore that, but I don't foresee that being the case. I sure as hell wouldn't do anything to trade up. I do not think that the Cavs should be in a position where they are giving up assets or consolidating assets yet. I just think that trading the young players or whatever the case may be, their value isn't going to be lower than it is right now. Like, I think that most people aren't going to give you proper value. So hold on to the pick. Take whichever of the three out of Vassell, Okoro, and Denny you like the most, and let's move forward from there.
The one thing I don't love about the thing with Oubre is that I think you would have to kind of get an idea if, like, you can lock him up long term. Because if you're doing that, mm-hmm. you kind of want to view him as a piece, and he can, I believe, be an unrestricted free agent going into next summer. So I think you'd kind of want to have an idea of if you could kind of at least have some semblance of an idea, like if you could kind of keep him long and kind of keep him in your system, because that makes it worth doing, especially if you could still get the sell.
Yeah.
Because then you're adding two, like, competent wing defenders in one summer, and that's, like, that's the ultimate thing. Yeah. The one kind of... Some of the things they could do, I guess the most interesting one to me in terms of trades, it really doesn't involve picks. It just involves, like, if Drummond opts in, could you flip him for something then and just give, like, send him out as a rental somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
That's more interesting to me than, like, the pick. I'm just saying, I'm at the point where I'm just like, take whoever you want. My guess, if it was today, it would be Okoro. And then you put that guy and you develop the hell out of that guy. You got to a point where you actually have, like, an interesting crop of wings and KPJ, Okoro, Jetty, and then, you know, I know the team really likes Windler, even if, like, the consensus on him is a little lower than everybody else. And then you get into a situation where at least you have stuff, and then, like, you're at least kind of building in a kind of a nice kind of organic way. I kind of like where that sort of could work itself out.
Yeah. I totally agree. It's I think the Cavs are actually in a position to kind of grow organically here. I would continue to explore options, both with Drummond and Kevin Love. I don't foresee Kevin Love you being able to move him at this point.
He's probably like a top seven untradeable contract.
Yeah, I would say so, but you never know. He could get traded to Golden State and all of a sudden be perceived as a great asset.
Wiggins for Love part two, baby.
Oh boy.
But yeah, I mean, if Drummond, if they've already kind of had exploratory talks to see what an extension would look like, and there isn't really interest from both sides, and you can work out a sign and trade, absolutely do that. Like, I think that they should be exploring those type of options right now, and who knows, maybe something is available, and it kind of helps you fit your timeline a little bit better there.
Yeah, it's weird because it all hinges on what Andre wants to do, and it feels so long ago when he was on Stugot's show where he said, like, yeah, no, I'm opting in, and then he kind of walked back that stance saying, I'm a free agent. Maybe it's just terminology just to make sure that he and his agent don't get in trouble for the financial litigations and stuff. And I know for a fact that he and the Cavs have explored an extension. I don't know where they're going. I have an idea of where the number's at from where the Cavs are coming from. It's about 20 to 25 million annually, which isn't
way too much. Wait,
that's I was going to say, sorry, not to disagree with you again, Chris, but that's kind of the range-ish that I'd be okay with if it was like a three-year extension.
If it was if it was 20, 25 is...
It could be worse.
If it's 366 and he expires at the same time as Love, I'm pretty okay with that.
Okay, here's my one kind of concern with that. After, like, doing all the research I did on rim protection and what he has been for his career as kind of a defensive center, paying him that much to back up, like, and be the support system for, like, a growing group of younger players that are going to still kind of be shaky in defense the next couple of years, and he's not, like, a actual, like, deterrent as a rim protector, even in a way, like, a more ground-bound player like a Nurkic or someone is, that amount of money for what he sort of actually is really concerning. Now, if you're going to say, like, okay, he's going to facilitate from the elbow more, and, like, that's going to keep our offense flowing and give us different looks, mm-hmm. like, there's an argument there, but the defensive part of Drummond is really what scares me more than anything else.
No, I definitely hear you there, and yeah. to me, the appeals...
Especially if he doesn't give a shit.
Right.
Because if he doesn't give a shit, this is, like, yeah. let him walk tomorrow.
If he doesn't want to be here, it's discussion over, because I think the one thing that we know with the Cavs right now is they're looking to acquire guys that want to be here. They understand the realities of their market. The reason that I had brought up Drummond even a month before the deadline as someone that I'd like to take a flyer on is the Cavs drafted three guards. I guess you can call KPJ a wing now, but three guys that their primary skill in college was pick and roll play. And under Boeheim, they didn't run any pick and roll because mm-hmm. when you have a college coach, hey, if you're running pick and roll or isolation, you don't get to show off how smart you are. So I think having a good pick and roll partner or a very good pick and roll partner for those guys can really kind of help them flourish on the offensive end. But I do think that your rim protection and motivation concerns are incredibly valid.
Yeah, it's just, it's worrisome with, I don't know. It's weird because Drummond reportedly clearly did not want to play for Boeheim, and I think maybe that was a deciding factor in just the fact that the rest of the team didn't want to play for Boeheim. And I wish we had a larger sample size of Drummond playing under J.B. Bickerstaff, because I'd feel more comfortable saying, like, yeah, don't throw an extension his way. But also, Drummond, I like the potential of him. Like, I go back and forth on this a lot. I know Chris is all the way out on him, but I still think I'm towing the line, like, you could talk me into it if it's 20-ish million. Like you said, Justin, if it's for a shorter extension that lines up with Love and they're both gone when the time their contracts are up, like, that works out perfectly. And, you know, conveniently, they both have the same agent, so maybe it works out that way. But
I don't want an extension right now. Like, no, I would rather.
I'd rather them trade him and then try and.
Committing to it and, like, trying to. I would love the non-press conference where they try to justify, like, paying Andre Drummond based on the sample of last year.
Yeah.
Because there is no argument that he was helpful when he played for them last year. There's none.
Hey, the Spurs game, he looked good.
And I also think there's just an opportunity cost, because when you're looking at that massive salary as an expiring contract, I do think that that's going to be something that's attractive come trade deadline next year, because not only are you clearing up a lot of space heading into a very great free agency class, mm-hmm. you're giving teams a rental for maybe a playoff run. If you're a playoff team that wants to make a bit of a run now and then also be a free agency player, he fits that mold perfectly. Mm-hmm. So I do think that from an opportunity cost standpoint, I really would prefer to see that. The other part that would make me more okay with an Andre Drummond kind of staying in Cleveland situation is if it means both he and Kevin Love are bought in, because I still do think Kevin Love can be a very good player when he's bought in, and if they're both like, hey, we'll give this an honest shot, that makes things a little more easy for me to stomach, because to Kevin's credit, even though he was a real pain a lot of this past season, when Sexton started playing better and the whole team was playing better, he was being a good soldier, and mm-hmm. it did seem like he was a little less frustrated, even though he likely still would prefer to be elsewhere.
He probably also, number one, I think JB, them having a history has to help, and number two, I'm sure Jeff Schwartz is a smart guy. I'm very sure Jeff Schwartz is like Kevin. Like, there's not a lot of options mm-hmm. here. Like,
unless you're getting unless paid there's a lot of COVID money. Amnesty that comes in, and then at that point you are not extending Drummond. You're getting rid of Love and you're starting fresh.
Yep. All right, Evan. Let's take a quick break, but tell everyone about our other sponsor here.
Well, Justin, I gotta ask you, what kind of car do you drive?
I drive a Santa Fe. I'm a SUV guy now.
Have you run into any problems with it? Do you need to replace any parts?
I do need to replace a part. I need a new viscous coupler. It's been a bit of a pain trying to find one.
I haven't checked their database yet, but if you need a new viscous coupler, I recommend checking out rockauto.com. With their ever-increasing...
I'll do that.
Yeah, no, for real. There you go. And chainsaws have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers like Justin. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business, serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the vehicles, brands, specification, and the prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
And with that, we'll be right back, and Justin's going to have to defend a take that I, frankly, don't even remember what the original take was right after this. All right, Justin, we're back here. Okay, I'm just going to clear the lane here. I'm going to let you ISO. Explain this Donovan Mitchell Collins second take, because frankly, if I ever fully understood what you were trying to articulate, it has been lost to the ether of the hell site that is Twitter.com.
Yeah, I've noticed that with how you've described it. I am not comparing Colin Sexton and Donovan Mitchell this
Chris
season.
Chris was absolutely disgusted when I brought this up the first time, so please keep going.
Oh, I heard his disgust. It was very, very clear. No, what I was doing...
Was I more disgusted discussing rim protection or Donovan Mitchell take? I like to think it was rim protection or wing defense. Yeah, yeah. Because the wing defense stuff is like the most depressing thing I've ever talked about on this podcast.
I did appreciate being called the Cavs Twitter Fox and Friends. That was nice.
I apologize. that's one of the rudest things I've ever said.
I really like it.
I take it back because... I take it back.
Listen, I'm more than happy. To be the minister of propaganda for Cash Twitter. I'm fine.
No one who I consider a friend deserves to be compared to those dolts on Fox and Friends. Continue.
So, what I was trying to communicate is, I think one of the shortcomings that I've had the past year and a little bit, and I think we've all kind of been guilty of this, is we start to have second contract conversations about players a little too soon. Like, we shouldn't really be saying, okay, we're going to move Colin Sexton to the bench due to fit at this point. We don't know what he's going to become. And the reason that I made the comparison between the two is because if you look at their age 21 seasons, Sexton is a more efficient player. He's a better jump shooter. The assist numbers are basically identical, and that's with the Cavs not running pick and roll and the Jazz running almost exclusively pick and roll to give you easy opportunities. But what I was trying to communicate is, okay, here's two guys that are 6'1". Mitchell has a 6'10 wingspan. Sexton has a 6'8 wingspan. Mitchell is a bad defender still. He's the worst defender on the Jazz. And my point was, what Sexton's doing offensively it's noteworthy, it's special, mm-hmm. And if he continues to progress along this path, which there's no guarantee of, but if he does, that's the type of player that you need to start to figure out how to build things around. If he doesn't become a, let's say if his passing flash they showed where he's around 4 assists last season doesn't continue, and it kind of regresses a little bit and he doesn't improve on the defensive end, then yeah, maybe as you look at the development of other players, you start to make a kind of a plain time decision or what role he's in. But I do think rushing to label a guy prior to them really blossoming as a player, before they're even at that second contract point, I don't think it really does any service to the fans. And with someone like Sexton, who just continues to improve, you look at the videos now, it's clear he's added a ton of muscle. I don't think that's wise to do that with him just yet.
No. Can you give me all the smoke? I need all of it. Like, getting secondhand from you, just giving this to Chris. So, Chris, what is your rebuttal?
I don't have one. I think that's a fair take. I think the pick and roll point is something that I frankly have overlooked. The Cavs, unlike the Jazz, did not like allow Colin Sexton to come in and play in like a competent system.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the first. Like, Chris Manning is admitting he's wrong.
The comparison works is the Jazz realized, hey, Mitchell, even though he's a primary initiator when it comes to scoring, he doesn't get his teammates involved at a high enough rate, so we need to get a point guard to play alongside him.
And they have Joe Ingles, who like really does a ton of facilitation for that team.
Correct. So let's say let's say what we saw from Garland the last 2 months, where he was averaging 14 points and 5 assists. Let's say there's a modest improvement there where he's a 16 and 7 type guy, or like 16 and over 6. And you get Denny in the draft, and he's providing some secondary playmaking. And Sexton continues to kind of grow in that role. You can get enough playmaking there with him. And I do think that almost any other team, if they had Sexton doing what he did, where the last 46 games, you're talking over 23 points, 3.4 assists, 49% from the floor, 43% from three, they would be very excited about that. I think we've done a poor job kind of pigeonholing him into a role. And I'm excited about kind of what the Cavs are saying when they say, hey, we want to start trying to win every single game. We want to create accountability. And if Kevin Porter Jr., Darius Garland, Dylan Windler, Love, Drummond, and all those guys are able to take some of the offensive burden away, maybe we see Sexton start to grow on the defensive end. Because sorry to be long-winded on here, but
No, it's good.
Zach Lowe had made an interesting point with Devin Booker years ago, where when the game was close, you saw him make good plays on the defensive end. And he said, as this team improves, I wouldn't be surprised to see him contribute on that end. And we saw games where Sexton basically won a game on defensive plays. Or when the competition is tight, he'll make the individual plays but doesn't know what he's doing within the team system on the defensive end. And I do think that if he can realize his potential on that end, that matters so much more than the playmaking to me, because you can make that up in other areas, and that scoring is really special.
Chris, I have to ask you this. Do you think playmaking by committee is an avenue that the Cavs could take, and do you think it's sustainable? Because Justin laid out a lot of good points. Like, you have Garland, you have Porter, you have Sexton, who is showing potential as a playmaker in Bickerstaff's offense. And Love is known as a playmaker. Drummond tries to be a playmaker. And Larry Nance can move the rock as well. And then Dylan Windler compares himself to Joe Ingles. So he has confidence in his playmaking ability, I hope. So, like, do you think that's a sustainable thing for the Cavs?
Yeah, and I think it's what they should be doing. And I think for, if you look at Sexton, I think the two areas I want to see if he can do next year is number one, I want to see if he gets a little like stronger, I think the defensive side of him becomes like a lot more interesting. If he like the Eric Bledsoe size thing, if he could just get there, I'd be like, okay, like he can kind of switch a little more, at least kind of bang and defend a little more. Mm-hmm. I want the thing that I think holds me back from being like all the way in on this is he does not. Colin Sexton does not play like it at a middle gear ever.
Yeah,
he is either like waiting to move or moving at 100 miles an hour. There's no like there like the shot that Mitchell hit the other night to ice the game for Utah, where he stuck it in Paul Millsap's eye. Sexton would have rushed into that shot, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, if you give him that, he's taking, like, a really quick pull-up. He's not kind of setting up Millsap, reading his legs, and then creating the next bit of space. That is the next step for him. And if he gets there, even halfway there, next year, like, that is where I think a lot of this gets written. But I think the playmaking by committee is the way for the Cavs forward, because you have Kevin. Like, for all of their limitations and their maybe malaise about being in Cleveland still, Kevin Love should still be able to be a good facilitator, even if he's not Minnesota Kevin Love anymore. Mm-hmm, yeah. It is an underrated part of Drummond's game that he can pass out of the elbow a little bit. There are ways to make this work, and I think that has to be leaned on. And if they can do that with pick and roll and some other sets and kind of steal some stuff from like Kenny Atkinson's time with pre-Kyrie in Brooklyn, like there are ways, I think, to really make that work. And I think Sexton, it's notable that they did push him off ball to allow him to spot up, because that's going to allow him to be more effective and be kind of a piece that can move around a little bit.
And that ties into what we were talking about earlier, where I think one of the reasons you want to be competitive and try to win every game is because there is going to be growing pains. I mean, you describe what Donovan Mitchell did, and you look at his first 2 years in the playoffs, like he shot 32% from the field and 25% last year. Like, he did not have as refined of a middle game, and he's kind of expanded from there. He's learned from those failures, and I think next year can be a season kind of like the last Kyrie year prior to LeBron returning, where you probably end up low 30s in terms of wins, because mm-hmm. even though you might have the horses to actually make the playoffs if everyone's playing at their ceiling, the inexperience is going to cost you close games. These guys are going to try to figure things out, and that's going to take time, but I think you can lay the groundwork there. I think you get more usable film You can see where you failed in a close game versus, oh, you didn't try while you're down 20. There's nothing that the assistant coaches can really point to in those situations. I think you can lay the groundwork there. And let's say you get lottery luck. That's ideal because then you've developed what you have and you get to throw in a Cade Cunningham. But like Kevin O'Connor said, there's at least 8 players next year that would go first overall in this draft. Mm-hmm. So if we end up with the 7th best lottery odds and it only costs us like maybe a 10% chance to jump into the top 4, I'm fine with that. Like I think we should just focus on developing whatever talent we have. And that has been the model recently. Like any non-glamour market, they're doing it not with high picks, but by developing and maximizing what they have. And then you can always make a trade for a disgruntled star or capitalize on opportunities. Just keep flexibility and develop what you have.
Evan, any final thoughts?
No, not really. I mean, I think Justin is completely owned and obliterated you at this point, Chris, and I might be in the market for a new co-host. Like Justin, if you want to double dip and
I will say this, I like if the Cavs like consolidate their young players for a win now move, I think that would deserve criticism. But I do think from a front office messaging and from a coaching standpoint and what they tell the players, it should be, hey, let's try to overachieve, let's make playoffs. And if they do make playoffs and you miss out on a lottery talent, that means it's going to take more than one of Kevin Porter Jr., Colin Sexton, Darius Garland taking a leap to a borderline cornerstone place. Like, let's say Sexton's your 80% Mitchell, KPJ's your 80% Jimmy Butler, and ooh, Garland's giving you Kemba vibes. Like, it would take that sort of a thing for that your only initiators to bring you to a playoff team. These guys would actually have to be cornerstone pieces, and that makes things a whole hell of a lot easier for you.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think if the Cavs, what they do next season will, I think, dictate a lot of where we're headed here.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think if they have like a normal
a modicum of Peja Stojakovic,
he's Duncan Robinson.
I like that.
If they can be if they can just be normal for like 6 months, like that's a win.
That's wishful thinking, but.
And ultimately, I mean, we want this team to be entertaining, right? Like, and mm-hmm. I think there's going to be enough guys to be invested in that they can play an entertaining style. And, you know, like, let's figure it out from there. That's kind of my mentality for next season. And it's very disappointing that it's so far away because I do think that there's going to be enough really, really interesting storylines next year that I'm excited about it, even though it's very unlikely that it results in a playoff appearance.
Absolutely. Justin, give everyone the plugs as we get out of here.
You can check us out at the Chase Down Podcast. We do things once a week right now, so not as prolific as these guys here on Locked On, but check us out and do the same thing for us that you should do with Locked On Cavs, which is give really nice ratings, reviews, and good word of mouth, because it really helps our podcast grow.
Oh, man.
Yeah, thanks.
You're not going to tell people check to out the Chase Down Podcast.
Yeah, you got to cook the books. Yeah, unsubscribe and resubscribe. That's the way to go.
Yeah, Carter's okay. Justin's great. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Justin, for coming on. And we'll talk to y'all soon and do some more crossroads because, boy, oh, boy, we are going to be a while without Cavs basketball.
Yeah.
Evan, send us out.
Wear a mask. Go Cavs.